When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Risking head and skin, if we're behind, then never mind. We'll fight and fight and win, for we're from Tigerland.
G'day everybody and welcome to the 15th edition
15!
Welcome to Hutto of Tiger Tragics. My name is Mitchell Scott. We welcome back Tony Shebeki after a week off. How are you, Shebex?
Oh, I'm okay, Mitch. I probably need to be here just to relax a little bit. It's been a very busy week and a bit.
Well, it's only going to get
busy. Two trips up to Ipswich for the motor racing and the week at Mount Hotham with 40 Year 11 students on the ski camp.
How was that? Was it cold?
Knackered. That was we started to get the start of the snow on Thursday, and it was beautiful. I've never been to Mount Hotham before. It's not a bad place. I've been to Buller. I've been to Falls Creek. First time at Hotham. Very nice.
I've never been. I've only been to Buller. Hello to Carl Bianco.
Hello, gentlemen. Great to be here after another Tiger win.
Well, I was going to say, dare I say, the most relaxing part of the week may have been putting the feet up yesterday at 3:20 and watching Richmond just do what it does now, and that was beat Hawthorn. Our 13th win of the season, and we are playing finals. Now, that we are 99%. We are more than a 99% chance. We're three wins clear of eighth mathematically, with far better percentage. So, it's barring some sort of absolute catastrophe, we are featuring in September, gentlemen. So, I want to say well done to us, but it's not really. We're not the 22 out there on the field each week. We're just sitting in the stands supporting. But compared to where we thought we were going to be 12 months ago. You know, this time 12 months ago, the Focus on Footy group was preparing to come in and, you know, shake the board up and get rid of Damien Hardwick, and we're going to get rid of Brendan Gale and do a sweep through the place. And suddenly here we are, sitting third on the ladder.
Can you remind me to call Flight Centre afterwards? I just have to cancel my September holidays that I had booked. Well, at the end of last year.
Have you got any more trips to Hotham booked? You might need to postpone them as well.
I'm not a Melbourne supporter, Mitchell, so just one per year does me fine. No, I've got. I'll tell you what I do have, though, and we've got a real weird situation in our family, is that we've got friends who are getting married up at Port Douglas the day before the grand final.
Oh, you told us about this. So you're potentially coming.
Well, I am back. I've booked my flight back for Friday night because obviously I've got to work at the grand final on Saturday. But so for me, it's fine. For my younger son, Mitchell, who would love to go and see Richmond in the grand final should we got there, he's not booked to come back until Sunday. So I need to make a decision sooner rather than later. Do I just bring him back with me, and should Richmond make the grand final, then hopefully I can get him a ticket and we can get him in. But should they not, well, he just comes back with me anyway and we just find something to look after the grand final day.
I think I would leave it until, look, because this is, I think, probably comes to the first question of, is the lid off yet? And I'm it's wobbling a bit. I don't think it's off. I disagree. You reckon the lid's off?
Well, have you seen Damien Hardwick's comments in the Herald Sun today? And while it doesn't exactly say the lid's off, Hardwick said it was not going to be easy to shield his players from the build-up. I think we just embrace it. We're enjoying the challenge at the moment and enjoying the struggle of the AFL season. I think we just embrace it. I think they are perfect words. Let the players, don't try and say, all right, guys, I don't want you to worry about finals. I don't want you to, let's take it week at a time. Let's just go, all right, we're in the finals now. We know we can't miss. We could possibly be top four. We win one of our next three games, we'll definitely be top four. That's a mathematical
certainty. Champion data say we're more than 99% chance of top eight, and we're 76% chance of top
four. We're two games clear of five. So if we win one more game, we honestly cannot lose.
Yeah, it's going to take
a top four spot.
And based on what we saw from Port Adelaide, obviously, on the weekend, that they are very vulnerable in that fifth position.
Now, having said that, we're only a serious win away from second place, and I would rather have our run into the last three games than GWS's. They've got Western Bulldogs at Etihad Stadium this week, GWS. Now, they don't normally play well at Etihad Stadium. Western Bulldogs have come alive a little bit, so there's a chance there that could go down for GWS. They've got Geelong at Simmons Stadium in the final game.
And I would imagine they have a stronger, they'll be facing a stronger Geelong side than what we're going to be facing this weekend. We'll talk about that a bit later.
Possibly even a Joel Selwood back in. Well, yeah, exactly right. And then they're only probably, and you wouldn't even call it a certainty because they're playing pretty well at the moment also, is West Coast at Spotless Stadium. So GWS have a tough three games going in. Richmond beat Geelong this week. All of a sudden, we've got that break on the Cats. We win one of our last two games. There's every possibility we could finish second. And I've been saying this for weeks, and people have been laughing at me.
They've been laughing at all of us, haven't they?
And my calculation came down to this game this week would be the determining factor. But Sydney Swans did Richmond a massive, massive favour by beating Geelong last week. And Melbourne could have done us an even bigger favour had they have actually played like we expect they could play.
And they could have put us, we could have been top two by now.
Exactly.
The funny thing is, you talk about the mathematics of the whole thing. Hawthorn actually did us a favour the week before by taking a game off Sydney as well, which meant that Sydney then, it's like everyone's sort of latching on and dragging the other one back down, and we just keep sort of pushing ahead. So
the next question needs to be asked.
Yeah.
And this is a serious question. When in the hell are people other than Richmond supporters actually going to take Richmond seriously?
Well, today is the day.
Well, I don't know if it is.
Well, Gary Lyon says today they can win the flag.
Well, I look at the bookmakers, and they've still got Richmond as the fifth line of betting as a $9 chance. Now, to me, that means people still aren't taking Richmond seriously as a premiership contender. Alistair Clarkson said any one of the top 10 teams could win the flag this year. It just depends who gets it right in the last 4 weeks of the season.
Well, the amazing thing is we've been the most consistent team of anyone all season, and
I think Adelaide probably have.
We've had two bad games. They've had probably four or five. Like even in the games that we've lost, we've been right in the games. They've had a few blowouts here and there. We've had when you look at Richmond across the whole board of the 19 games we've played, there have been what you would deem two bad games. Don't get me wrong, there's been some bad losses.
GWS.
Yeah, the Adelaide loss and the St Kilda loss, they're the bad games. The Fremantle and GWS games, they were good games in the sense that we were actually in the contest right up until the finals iron.
But they were bad losses because we were bad.
And that's the amazing thing is, we were a David Mundy, a spoil on David Mundy and a Shai Bolton review away from being top of the ladder right now. And then I'd be asking that very same question going, if people still aren't taking us seriously now, then where are we?
Can we turf the review system?
No.
No.
Like, I mean... I'm not saying that because of the decisions that have gone against us. It goes against... There's plenty of decisions across the board. You know, if we go back 10 years, we didn't... Well, even less than 10 years, we didn't have this review system. So,
yeah, it cost teams grand finals so much.
It just takes too much time.
Well, that's the fault.
It will cost someone a grand final.
Yeah, well, it cost St Kilda a grand final ball just about in 2009. Tom Hawkins hit the post. There was no review system. They ended up it was a 2-goal difference in the end because Max Rook, because the game was over. But you take that goal off Tom Hawkins, and suddenly the context of the game is different. There was one in 2011 that I reckon swung a bit of a different way as well. So I think it's a necessity. It's an evil one. I think they need to invest more into it, though, because, I mean, we saw a couple of cases yesterday. There was two involving Dustin Martin, and that will bring us into the game for yesterday, which we will talk about in just a tick. There was a Dustin Martin one where he snapped it, and it's bounced, and might have been Schoenmakers' fingers, and it was clear as day that it was touched, and they spent 3 minutes reviewing it. And then there was the other one with Anthony Miles, who needs to have a hearing test because he clearly didn't hear who was running in beside him as he's going 1 metre out to run it in. And the ball spilt out, and Dusty then sort of thought he got his foot to it. Again, they spent another 3 minutes checking of it. Like, no, clearly it was touched. Just call it a behind and move on. I agree in that the system could operate better, but I think we need it. We can't fault the system just because it hasn't gone our way, unfortunately.
Well, the thing that annoyed me most yesterday was the Dusty Martin, the first call, where
it was clearly touched, though.
I know, but the initial call from the goal umpire was, I think it's a goal. Then all of a sudden, oh no, I think it's a behind. Like, make your decision, front up to that decision and say, yep, it was a behind, and then have the review system review it and make it conclusive that it was a behind. Don't say, oh, I think it's a goal. No, actually, I think it's a behind. Like, overturn your initial thoughts. Like,
yep.
There needs to be... it's like how we argue about umpires and consistency with deliberate out-of-bounds rule. No matter what you say, you know... It's,
I reckon. Look, I'll be. I reckon this is the week for whinging because we've just gone top three. No. So let's talk about yesterday's game. And Richmond did win its 13th, and we went up from fourth to third on the ladder. Overtook Geelong due to that fantastic result that went our way. Richmond winning a 13-15-93 in the end to Hawthorn 9-10-64. You got the sense in probably the first 15 minutes of the game that Richmond was going to do its thing and Hawthorn weren't going to really fire a shot. I think going into the game. I was really worried because there was no Jack Riewoldt for a second week in a row, and I thought you can get away with it against Gold Coast, but Hawthorn had just put, you know, their last 6 weeks of form had been really good. They had put Sydney to the sword the week before. They were, you know, they had everything on to play for. They had Jared Roughead's 250th. The rain was gone. And I just thought, you know, they didn't have Luke Hodge out there who proved to be, I think, a massive loss in the end.
Yeah. That is the difference. Hodge out of that team and that Hawthorn back line looks as unsettled as any back line you've ever seen unsettled. And I wasn't worried when Jack missed another game because I knew that Hodge was out as well, and I just thought that is really going to help us. A massive help for us not having Hodge in that back line.
You're right. I underestimated it because he is literally a coach out on
without
the field for them. And he's particularly, you know, they threw Sicily and Gunston back and these guys and you know, they're still trying to work out how to play defensively, and we're having Hodge out there just gives them the instruction and the direction of where they need to go.
You need your generals out there in the battle, and Hodge wasn't there. And let me say, should Alex Rance be injured in the next 2 or 3 weeks heading into finals, I would not like our chances going into finals. Regardless of how well our back line's playing, you need your leaders out there directing traffic, and Alex Rance obviously does that so well.
And that's kind of like that. And I suppose that comes back to with Jack being out, was that we do have with our leadership group, you've got Rance is a vice captain, Riewoldt's a vice captain, and Koch is the captain. And that way, there's sort of a captain in each sector of the ground. What yesterday did do for us, though, is what it meant. We were so unpredictable going forward. We just swept forward, and Hawthorn did not know where to look because they didn't have Hodge out there directing them where to go. They set up their Clarko's cluster, which is all about guarding space and not playing on the man, but they just didn't know where to plonk themselves because we had all these little blokes swarming everywhere and everyone streaming forward. And it meant that, you know, where are we going to Edwards? Where are we going to Castagna? Where are we going to, you know, Corey Ellis bobs up and kicks a couple of goals from free kicks and marks. And, you know, Dan Rioli's taking contested marks 25 metres out because they just didn't know where to look. We have so much... we had a lot of lateral movement as well coming inside forward 50. Josh Caddy bobs up and kicks 4 goals for the first time ever in his career. His best game in yellow and black by a mile. He had 28 disposals, I think it was, 4 goals, 17 score involvements. And he might have the world record for one season of running in and kicking goals from the goal square. No one seems to do more than Josh Caddy. He streams forward as soon as there's an open goal square and a cherry pick goal to be had. He loves it, but... it just, you know, you talk about people standing up in the absence of Jack Riewoldt and that. He was sublime, and, you know, I think we sort of, by quarter time, it was four or five goals the difference, and we didn't really have to breathe a sweat. Carl, what did you take out of the game?
No, I thought it was a good game. I certainly think that we should have really ran over the top of Hawthorn a lot more, increased the margin a bit. There's a few goals that were gifted to Hawthorn in the first quarter, in the last quarter as well. Do you think it's still a case of Hawthorn are the untouchables at times with the umpires? Like, again, I don't mean to bring umpires into it, but I do at the same time.
You do all the time, Carl.
it just appeared to me, you know, there was some debatable decisions by the umpires yesterday, and there was a couple of goals that were gifted to Hawthorn. Now, I know, obviously, Hawthorn, to their credit, they did get a couple of goals, and whilst we could have beaten Hawthorn by about 40 points, they got it back to, I think it was 29 in the end, so credit to them. And look... They have had a better second half of the season. We discussed this last week, Mitch. We said that they're not the same Hawthorn team that we saw at the start of the year that was getting flogged and it couldn't gel together.
Well, they'd beaten Sydney. They'd lost to Hawthorn by less than a kick. They'd beaten Adelaide in Adelaide, and they drew with GWS. So they were the form teams of the comp aside from us, and that was their run of form. So they hadn't lost since the bye. So that's why I thought, you know, this is a dangerous game for us because if they were playing for a final spot and they came up dramatically short in the end, and You know, I think you mentioned how we didn't put them away. That second quarter, I think we kicked 1-4 and they kicked a goal, and it was just kind of a stalemate. We had so much of the ball up in our forward end for so much.
It was a dogged effort,
yeah,
by our guys, keeping the ball in that forward half, and that was probably one of the best things that they did yesterday. Was that defensive forward defensive pressure
it's
that
immense.
They put was amazing.
And that's I think that's what you are going to get as a result of that style of game. Is it will get messy sometimes up in your forward half because the ball is just bouncing around so much, and you're applying that pressure. It isn't going to be clean. And particularly when you haven't got, you know, Riewoldt in there, who's just going to be a hit-up target all the time. It's not, the ball's not going to come in as cleanly. But
from what I saw of yesterday's game,
yep,
it reminded me of what we've been speaking about a fair bit, especially in the last 4 or 5 weeks. Don't try and be the Harlem Globetrotters. Just get in there and do the hard work. And that's exactly what Richmond did for the whole of yesterday's game. That Brandon Ellis, when he went in, got a hard ball get in the third quarter. Lots of that sort of stuff happening, and just tough, hard play. And that's what Richmond are good at doing. Getting in, getting the ball, getting it forward. Don't try and be fancy. Just do the hard work and it'll pay off.
They keep bringing up that it's a bit like watching the Bulldogs last year. It's very workmanlike. It's very pressurised. It's not glamorous. It's blue collar, not white collar. And I take a lot of pride in that, I think, because I'd much rather be known for hard work and effort and, you know, sort of team camaraderie than
have 18 magnificent players who are just, you know, glamorous out there doing, you know, stylish things.
I don't want to call them the GWS Giants when you mention that sort of thing, but that's kind of what brings to mind.
You're right. What is the old saying? A champion team will always be a team of champions.
And that's what we're starting to find. And, you know, I think one of the biggest positive I took out of yesterday were that the two guys, Prestia and Caddy, are finally playing to the standard of why we brought them in. You know, Prestia, we keep forgetting that we burnt a pick six, a high first round draft pick on Dion Prestia. And at the start of the season, we're all, you know, burnt was probably the right word. We're sitting, hang on, is he actually doing anything more than what we need to yesterday?
Hey, I'll take it back to your start of that comment. Keep forgetting. I don't think any of us have forgotten when we came up for Dion Prestia, because we've been talking about how bad he's been all year.
Well, the last month, I mean, he had the rest last week. He didn't go to the Gold Coast to face his old side, and must have done him a world of wonders, because he had his best game in the yellow and black, had 31, had 31 disposals, 28 pressure acts, thank you very much, kicked a goal, 13 contested possessions, 7 clearances, and I think he had 4 inside 50s as well with that. So he's finally living up to that tag of, you know, why we brought him in and why we spent a first round draft pick on him, because that's what we wanted him to do. And, you know, we sort of took it with a grain of salt, but Damien Hardwick always sort of said that he would get better as the year went on, because he didn't get to do a preseason properly. And, you know, we're now around 20, going into we're going to have 3 weeks and then the bye for the finals, and then, you know, he might be just ready to go to another level again.
I don't think we ever doubted the impact Caddy and Prestia would have in the side, and since they've moved from their old sides to Richmond, they're certainly starting to cement their best form in our best 22, I think. And I do think that it was Prestia's best game on the weekend against Hawthorn. He was just at every contest. When the ball hit the ground, he was in, he was trying to get it out, and, you know, so we can get the clearance inside our forward 50. And obviously we didn't have Jack there, so we didn't have a tall target, apart from when Ivan Soldo was down there, or Nank was down there. I have to give credit to Soldo. I think yesterday he did a couple of small things. He's sort of starting to come of age a little bit.
But that'll happen. The more games he plays,
yeah,
the better he's going to get.
And it was nice. I think because he and Nankervis were able to sort of work McAvoy over across the course of the game. Ruffy probably didn't spend as much time in the ruck as he may normally have. It was a really nice moment, I reckon, when Soldo did get, I mean, it was a shank little pass that ended up hitting him on the chest in the goal square there, and then he went back, and I can't say it was a conventional looking drop punt from the goal square. He sort of hunched over it, and he looked like he was almost going to rugby sort of drop kick it off the ground, but it got the job done, and it was really nice to see everyone get around him and make that a moment for him.
You've got to remember, he is taller than Ivan Maric. He comes from a basketball background.
It's a long ball drop, isn't it? I was going to say, I don't think he's the type to really kick the ball all that often, is he? If you look at his stats yesterday, what did he have? He had five disposals, of which... Oh, no, he had 3 kicks, 2 handballs. Okay.
I thought
he'd be more the handballing type.
Yeah, as we've said, it's going to take some time for him to develop as a great ruckman. And He's got his cousin Ivan Marić certainly mentoring him, so I look forward to see what to seeing what he actually does in the years to come, Soldo, because I think he'll be a great ruckman for us, and he's done the job that we've needed him to do, really, to contest every ruck contest.
There was a patch in the game where I went into the game. I had Twitter stashes with people on the Sunday because as I said in the podcast last week, I tipped Hawthorn. I thought, and as I said before, I thought we were vulnerable, and that's just the emotional, pessimistic Richmond supporter within me who, as I still look at this, and as I say before, I think we are third on the ladder. We've lost one of our last six, I think it is now. We've had two bad games for the year, and I still get this feeling of, oh, we're going to drop this one. We're going to drop this one. And there was, come half time, I thought, oh, no, I think we'll be right. But there was still probably there was a 10-minute patch in late in the third quarter there where Hawthorn started getting control of the play a little bit. They kicked a couple of goals. But even then, I think they had four, they kicked four for the game for that point, and they were going to need to kick six or seven unanswered in the last quarter to get over that line. And I think as soon as we kicked our first goal of the last quarter, I thought, okay, they can pile on four or five here, and we're still going to be able to hold on, I think. And I was really pleased with the fact that even in that last quarter, when the game did open up a bit, and Hawthorn would just they did get a couple of freebies here and there, we were getting just as many freebies back down the other end as well. We were still running as hard. Our transition running, there was a couple of bit of plays where we were flocking forward. It was like the V in the Mighty Ducks, where there's four or five just streaming. And there was one bit of play where Koch in the second quarter, it didn't end up in a goal, I don't think, in the end, but Koch did a Dusty Martin fend off, turned 180, gave the handball off to Nane Curvis. Nane Curvis gives a little dish handball off, lays the block, running through, I think, was Butler and Caddy, and then the ball went inside 50. And I looked at that and I went, that is Richmond football these days. And I went, I got a bit tingly. I was a bit excited, Chebex. It was really, that's the sort of thing that I'm now looking at. And that happens on a week-to-week, day-to-day basis. And it's just so pleasing to be a Richmond supporter at the moment. And we talk about is the lid, you think the lid's off, you think the lid's on, I think it's wobbling. So at what point you talk about the critics and the thing, do we think Richmond will win the flag, or can win the flag, is probably a better question.
I have no doubt. And once again, I go back to what Alistair Clarkson said, any team in the top 10 at the moment can win the flag. And the Tigers can. We spoke about this a couple of weeks ago, is that nobody has literally, apart from probably Adelaide maybe in the last few weeks, has actually said, we are the flag favourites. We are the ones that will take this premiership. Adelaide are the only real team to have done that, and that's only been in the last few weeks. But there's been plenty of times through the year. Adelaide won, GWS another. I think even Port Adelaide there at one stage too. Geelong also have come good for 3 or 4 weeks and look great, and then all of a sudden drop the unexpected. For me, that's not a flag favourite. So with that in mind, Richmond are as good a chance as anyone. And when you look at the Richmond structure, again, we see a very, very strong defensive unit. Fantastic. We see a not-so-strong forward unit as a traditional forward setup, but what we see is a forward line that is willing to do anything that they can to make sure that that ball stays in their forward half and gives themselves a chance. We see a midfield that is hell-bent on running up and down the ground. All our midfielders get back in defence. Martin gets back. Cochin gets back. They all get back in defence. Brandon Ellis gets back. They all go up forward as well to help out where they can. Martin's always good for a goal or two.
Kicked two real crucial ones in early in the third quarter yesterday, which took the game off the table.
Correct. Koch is good for maybe a goal a game as well now, which is fantastic that he's brought that into his game style. So there is not one point. And then you look at the interchange bench, and any player that comes off the interchange bench seems to fit well into the actual structure. There is no depth. A Martin comes off or a Cochin comes off, and it doesn't matter. You bring someone on who's just as valuable. So at the moment, we don't seem to have any serious holes in our lineup.
No.
Injuries are going to be the determining factor. The last 3 weeks, if we come through unscathed, and our boys will be sore, and they are. And I've spoken to a couple of blokes at Richmond, and I know our talls right across the club through the VFL and into the AFL team are very, very tired boys. They've had a big, big year because we've had so many injuries, so they've been laboured with so much more work. If we can get through this 3-week period and get into that 1 week rest where the blokes are just sort of pull back just a fraction and just we can be as good as anyone. I have no doubt about that.
This couple of weeks off for Jack Riewoldt might actually prove to be beneficial for him, and he might come back and not, you know, he's had a couple of weeks rest. Things that he might have been sore about.
I just hope he sees that.
there was a caller on KB show on Friday, and you know, Barmy knocked it straight on the head, saying no, there's nothing in that. But you know, there
Barmy would
everything's 2 to 3 weeks, Barmy. But the caller said that no, Jack won't play again this year. Now I don't know if that's just causing a bit of mischief, but you know, I must say, you know, given the amount of dialogue all week with he's playing, he'll be fine. We checked in with the club on Wednesday afternoon because there was a thing going around that Fox Footy were actually reporting that he would defy medical orders and play anyway. And we checked in with them and they said, no, he won't need to defy medical orders because he'll be fine. He'll play. And then sure enough, come Thursday night, team sheets come out. I didn't get the tick of approval. He's not playing.
Now, forgive me for thinking this theory. It's a bit of a conspiracy theory here, or it might have been a tactical thing from Hardwick's point of view to just leave Jack aside for another week just to make sure that he was okay and to test whether or not we could come up against a quality opponent in Hawthorn without at all. Like, not to discredit Gold Coast by any means, but obviously we knew heading up to the Gold Coast that they would be an easier opponent to sort of not have a tall forward up against, because obviously we only really have Jack as a tall option when he's playing. So I don't know, but a theory of mine is it might have just been to make sure that Jack is 100% so that he can take on Geelong next week.
I think as the other thing, the factor of that as well, is that the early forecast for Sunday was that it was meant to be bucketing with rain all day, which would have suited that. Come at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, that was the case. But by 3 o'clock, it was clear and sunny, and I turned on the TV, and I was at Eddie Had Stadium doing the crossover with the other game, and flicked the TV on, and where's the sunshine come from? What is going on?
Well, you wouldn't have known if you were at Eddie Head because the roof was closed.
Yeah, exactly. The roof was shut. Now, that's all we knew.
These comments by Damien Hardwick in his press conference doesn't instill the confidence that you would like to know about Jack Riewoldt and where his situation is. And the comments go, he was pretty close this week. If he doesn't get the tick off from the doctors, then I'm sure he'll go searching for another. So if he doesn't get the tick from the doctors, now that to me doesn't say that he is definitely 100% ready to go for this week. I think he's already ticked off half of Victoria. We're pretty confident he'll be right to play. But in nowhere does he say we are 100% certain Jack will be right this week.
No.
He talks about if he doesn't get the tick from the doctors, and we're pretty confident. To me, when you start saying stuff like that, that's where rumours are going to start. Well, hang on, maybe Jack isn't right, and maybe what people do know maybe come into effect. And so I wouldn't take it as a given that Jack will be right this week.
No,
based on those comments.
Well, in my opinion, I thought he looked a little bit frustrated sitting in the box when they did show vision of him. Not frustrated in a sense that, you know, he couldn't see
what was going on.
Well, maybe that was the case, Mitchell. Maybe he was just getting frustrated. Am I? But
he was just listening to the Channel 7 commentary guard. What is happening?
Well, it may have been that too, Shebex. Who knows? But yeah, look, I would be surprised if Jack isn't back this week. But at the same time, we want him 100% because we want to make sure he's a key part in our final.
But I'm just saying, based on those comments, and always, I mean, we've all been told as media people to read between the lines. When you hear something from someone in the AFL, what does KB say? Lying is the second language of the AFL. Read between the lines. And to me, if you read between the lines there is nothing that says Jack is guaranteed a game this week.
I get the impression that sort of comment is very much handballing all
to the medical team?
Yeah, everything. Yeah. Just to say it's out of our hands whether he plays or not. So don't blame us if he doesn't play.
No, fair enough.
It's on the medical team. Knowing, you know, Jack a little bit through he's, you know, been through the corridors here a bit of this, and he'll be as desperate as anyone to get back out there. The issue is with the injury. Obviously, he's had a lacerated cornea, and it needs to heal to a certain point before you can actually go and do full training and that sort of thing. And the issue is if you do run 13, 14 Ks a game, your heart rate increases and your blood obviously is pumping through your body. If those vessels aren't healed in your eye,
they'll start bleeding again.
They can start bleeding again. They can start doing more damage. So that's why it's such a risky sort of procedure that he's had in the first place, and it's why they're making no risks about it. And, you know, even last week when they said, oh, he'll be right next week, I said, Oh, I'll believe it when I see it.
So, Nick Riewoldt, when you come out and you bag your cousin for not playing because he had a sore eye, how are you feeling now?
Well, he thought his eye was... did you hear last Tuesday he was talking about when it actually happened? He thought his eye was actually going to be hanging out of his socket when he sort of cupped his...
It's pretty bad.
I'm doing this right now. No, you can't see, but he sort of cupped his hand over his eye and he pulled it away and there's a pool of blood in there and he thought that, maybe he might have had his eyeball hanging
did
in there.
Did I tell you that happened to my mum's Maltese Shih Tzu?
What?
A couple of... It did. Christmas Day. Christmas Day 2 years
maybe
ago.
Maybe your child got her in the eye.
We had Christmas at our place, and Mum brought her little Maltese Shih Tzu.
Oh, no.
And which I didn't know, but are actually quite common for their eyes to pop out of the socket.
Same with pugs.
Yeah, exactly. So we had another dog there for my wife's cousin, and the Maltese Shih Tzu was down the backyard. The other dog was up the front, which is a Labrador. So my brother-in-law just gave it a bit of food. Just put it there, and all of a sudden the Maltese Shih Tzu comes running up because it heard the food and smelled. The Labrador just turned around to sort of say, "Nick off, that's mine." And in the process of doing that, just nicked it on the neck, and enough of that was enough to pop the eye out of the eye socket. Oh. So we found ourselves at the Werribee Vet Hospital Christmas Day with my mum freaking out because his dog had an eye popped out of its socket. Oh. I just looked at it. As soon as I picked it up, I've gone... You don't look right. It doesn't look right. It's not a good thing.
Oh,
well, so I can understand how Jack must have
Yeah, I was going to say, Jack would be freaking out now hearing that. One thing I wanted to bring up, and you touched before. I'm trying to. You mentioned before about the depth of just within the 22 of when, one player comes off, another one comes on.
It's the most impressive list we've had. For that, for
and
a,
Damien,
yeah.
and
a
Hardwick said that
time.
Last year. He said the amount of kids we've got coming through that I'm going to get excited about. You should see these kids when they're all up and going. Jack Graham was unlucky not to get a gig in the end. He was named in the extended squad on Thursday.
Yep.
And we were talking his chances up. Like medalist last year in the under-18s, playing for captaining South Australia, and he's been doing big things in the VFL. Didn't end up making the 22, but you look at. Some of the names, I pluck out some of the names here that are in the 22 that have played the last few weeks, and I look at like Nathan Broad. Nathan Broad's keeping Jaden Short out of the team, and Jaden Short I thought had been having a pretty good season, and they really like his long kicking, but Broad comes in at the time when Hooley goes out for the suspension, and sorry, bad luck. Nathan Broad's is in better form. You're out, Short. Corey Ellis is at the same.
Yep. Yeah. No, I have to agree with you there, Mitch. I think. Broad, something I noticed is he's not afraid to just go at the ball, straight at the ball, and take a hard knock or two.
He's actually bigger than I thought he was.
Yeah, he looks like a pretty skinny kind of guy, a bit like a Connor Menadue type.
Yep.
I think he might be a bit shorter than Connor Menadue. I don't know. They kind of fit the same sort of build, and he's another one that's sort of not in our best 22 at the moment.
Yeah, Sam Lloyd's the other one. Can't get back in. I know you're... And I think and the reason why I think that is because... we keep bringing up the two key words for that forward line is speed and pressure. And Sam Lloyd, unfortunately, I don't think offers much in either of those. He can take a mark and play tall, but that's we've gone away from that for the moment. So that's why I think we find him out of the side. But I take that as a compliment for the squad as a whole. If you're not doing your job. You're out. You look at the stat sheet and people go, do Butler and Castagna do it? They certainly do. They do the pressure acts. They do hit the scoreboard. I'd love to get the champion data stats on how much they're involved in scoring acts, like in those change, because I reckon if you looked at about 80% of those goals yesterday, when they're coming in forward 50, either Butler, Castagna, or Rioli has got their hands on it at one point in that, and whether they're laying a tackle or then feeding the pill off to someone to then have the shot, that's why they're so crucial.
Remember too that these guys are still young kids, and they're still in the learning process of the whole thing, so they're not going to be absolute champions every week. Castagna had a great game last week. This week he was just a fraction off.
Mm.
But the good thing about it is where a couple of these little guys are having an off day or not their best day, a couple of blokes stand up. And then all of a sudden a Butler comes in and he does better than he did last week. So you've got to have those couple off, couple on all the way through this season and probably even into next season as well. Especially, we see it so often with footy players, they get those second-year blues. They play good footy in the first year, and then there's so much expectation of them to develop again as a footballer in year two, but they don't. They seem to drop off. Teams work them out. Teams can finally, you know, and then it's up to them to try and work a way to break from that. Year three, then they start to work again. So we've got to remember that also, that these kids aren't going to be 100% every single week. And, I think with that in mind, I think we're doing really well.
I think the other factors of those is those sort of mid-tier players, Bashir Hooley's come back in, hasn't missed a beat came straight back in.
Yep.
Sean Grigg and Brandon Ellis continue to do their thing. Nick Vlosten was probably a little bit off yesterday. David Asprey gave Schoenmakers a bath, playing up forward. Schoenmakers sort of rotates a little bit, mainly plays forward these days, but he had Asprey playing up forward and got a bath. They tried tagging Rance yesterday, like doing the defensive role with Taylor Duraya, and that just didn't work you talk about a mismatch. I think if you're going to make someone accountable for Rance, they have to have some height and some leg speed on him, because Duraya's he's no 6'4" Hercules or anything like that.
Yep.
I want to talk to you about the 2017 Brownlow medalist Dustin Martin. And I say he's the 2017 Brownlow medalist because
we don't know that for a fact.
Well, it's his to lose, and I say it's his to lose because he just doesn't have to get rubbed out to win it. And I don't even think it matters whether Dangerfield got rubbed out or not. I think he's that far ahead. It doesn't matter. Dangerfield, and the fact that Dangerfield has now missed one extra game, Dusty probably doesn't. Dusty, his game yesterday was an interesting one. Because he's noticeable, he did bob up with kick two, important goals. He had his 32 disposals, 509 metres gained, and his 6 clearances, which is pretty standard Dusty sort of work. But because I think Prestia and Caddy were just a lot more notable, and I think because they did actually sort of stand up that extra level, they may pinch some votes off him. But
yeah.
I think he should get one vote maybe again, but it's his to lose now. And we were talking last week, Shebex, while you were away, that I think that he's probably got 9 BOGs, which is 27 votes already, and there's not many others from Richmond who are going to be pulling votes off him for the most part. Carl was a little bit sceptical. What do you think of Dusty? Do you think it's his to lose?
At the moment, he would have to be very short price favourite to win the Brownlow medal.
I think he'd come in about $1.20.
No doubt about that. And did I hear someone say on KB's program this morning that we could have second, third and fourth in the Brownlow? With suspensions.
Yes, well, so Dangerfield obviously got suspended. Zach Merritt looks like he might get suspended for the gut punch he did on the weekend. And the other one which I wanted to bring up, actually, I'm glad you mentioned that, Tom Mitchell did a fend-off on Corey Ellis and broke his nose, or appeared to break his nose. He had to go off the ground, profusive bleeding from the schnoz. And I don't know, it's a funny category because Mitchell's got the ball and... Corey Ellis has come in for the tackle and he's put the forearm up to fend off, and he's broken his nose.
It's pretty clear cutter if that's the case.
Well, I suppose the question I asked myself was, I said, if Dustin Martin did that, because Dustin's the most notable for fend offs in the league, if he did that, we'd all be talking about him losing a Brownlow. Yeah. So,
well, I think he's probably the only... the only two that I think that could take the Brownlow off Dustin.
And a free kick was paid at the time, so that doesn't help Tom Mitchell's cause. Yeah. But
I can't see any other player now.
Might be a really boring count on Brownlow night this year.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting. I think the only interest will be whether Patrick Dangerfield actually wins it and doesn't win it.
Yeah.
That will be probably the most...
Yeah, can I just say on Tom Mitchell, though, I thought we actually shut him down compared to other teams that have played Hawthorn and tried to shut him down. I know he's still got a 30-plus, which is not out of the ordinary. It's an average day for Tom Mitchell, but I think he only ended up with 32. Like, I mean, he gets 30 pretty much every game.
35, but only 147 metres gained, that was the knock on him when he had his 50, that he didn't do enough with it. But if he's only... I didn't think he had a lot of the
cheap
ball.
Cheap disposals, but just small handballs out of the way.
They weren't as damaging. What he did have 32 pressure acts, and that comes down to him being in the guts of it. Because we were winning the ball so easily back over from turnover to then because of our pressure. Every time he had the ball or was going near the ball, but you would deem it a pressure act because there was pressure around it, and he's having to win it back out of pressure himself. So, he's a one-man band at the moment, Tom Mitchell for the Hawks. So
I don't rate him.
You don't?
No.
Okay.
I'm just putting it out there.
I wouldn't mind him in yellow and black because it'll
look, well, you wouldn't say no to a player like him because he guaranteed to get 30-plus every week out of him. But
he's good in your Supercoach team.
Yeah, that too. But, I don't think he's done anything amazing that really is a standout. Like, I give him respect. I give him credit. I'm sure one day he'll probably be a Brownlow medalist. But I just don't think he's that amazing as a player.
Kane Lambert was also really good. I think he rolled onto him at certain times. And I know Robbo wrote about him today in the Herald Sun in his tackle, the things that he likes, because he's just one of these sort of, maybe undervalued players who goes through and does his job. And he had 13 in the third quarter yesterday when the game was there to be
13.
Won. 13, kicked a... how many goals did he kick in the end? He didn't kick one. No, that's right. He was running in for one and got a just as he was about to kick. Probably went a little bit further and got ran down. And that was about the most of it. But he's another player who continues to sort of to do his job and has gone to the next level. And he came through the VFL system. So good on to him.
Can we just wrap up our look at this game by talking about the jumpers? Everyone happy with the Alana Madeline Foundation jumper? I think it looks great.
I loved it. And, I know every year they sort of step it up a little bit more with that partnership and what they do. And I know in previous years they've just had like one little bit on the armband has been purple and whatnot. But this time they've gone the whole trim was obviously had the purple even around the sash. And then on the back of the jumper they had the Alana and Madeline Foundation logo. And I think the fact that we're even talking about that right now means that it's done its job, and because the whole point of it is obviously to raise awareness, and then as a result of that raise some much needed funds for the Alana and Madeline Foundation, which is all about supporting families and kids that face issues of violence and that sort of thing in their lives.
They could have worn purple socks. I reckon that probably would have been the only
Did the umpires have purple flags?
They did. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I thought that's a nice touch as well. They are really good at doing that.
They do. They do get into that. You're right.
A good crowd. 58,000 in what was potentially going to be, bucketing rain at the time. I mean, if you were sitting there at midday going, I'm not going to the footy now. But for 58,000 still to turn up was magnificent. It was a Hawthorn membership return game, I think, for those who, for one of the games they lose down to Tassie. That probably turns our attention now to... what's looming to be the match of the round, really, which is Richmond versus Geelong down at Simmons Stadium, Saturday, traditional time slot, 2:10 p.m. Third versus fourth, Richmond, but both teams with a lot to play for. Richmond obviously playing to stay in that top four and potentially push to top two, and Geelong looking to fight out to try and stay in that top four. While they've lost Joel Selwood for probably what looks like the rest of the home and away season, possibly more with syndesmosis, which, if you talk to everyone else who's had it this year, the Ryan Griffins and those types, they've all missed 10, 12 weeks with it. And, I know Joel Selwood's a tough bugger, but...
Just quickly on that, Bontempelli had a similar injury last year. They were amazed that he could come back in 6 weeks. So I'm not saying that Selwood's out with a lengthy period of time, but it'd be pretty incredible if he comes back second week into the finals and he's 100%.
They also look like they could be without... They're still missing... at the moment, they're still missing Dan Menzel and Stephen Motlop, who are sort of... They're having injuries that are managed, could be back for this week. But they also look like they will almost certainly be without Tom Hawkins, who had another brain fade, threw another punch, which I just... I know it's great for us, and I sit... because it means they're down their best tall forward. But at the same time, I go, Tom, you were the poster boy for what not to do, because when they introduced that whole crackdown of the jumper punch, he was the first one to go. He was the scapegoat. He was the one who they went, when it came in, he threw the one on Matt Crouch, and they went, all right, nah, you're the one, you're getting a week for something that everyone else went, oh, really, a week? He's been dumb enough to do it again. He's got to learn his lesson there for that. Doesn't... I'm more than happy for him not to learn his lesson, because it means that we're most likely going to be without him this week, which means that Harry Taylor probably has to play forward for them. And the other one, Mitch Duncan threw one on top Tom Papley, so he might be missing as well. And he was just about their best on ground on Friday night for Geelong. So, look, this is a very, very, very winnable game for us. And I never thought I would say that, particularly at the start of the year.
There's going to be a lot of people out there around my age who remember the days back in the 80s. When we used to travel down to Cadinia Park to see Scott Turner play on Gary Ablett, Gary Ablett kick 15 and Richmond lose by 140, 150 points. There was one game where the only modicum of interest in the game was whether Geelong were going to score 220 on the scoreboard. We've been through a lot of pain at Cadinia Park. For the first time ever in my Richmond career as a supporter of the club, I'm not scared.
No.
I go along with Damien Hardwick. We are not scared of Geelong this week. No. Richmond can take it up to the Cats and actually go there with the confidence that Cardinia Park ain't going to be a graveyard for us this year.
Can I just say as well, I was looking at the stats of the last time we actually managed to beat Geelong at Cardinia Park.
2006, I was there. 2006,
yeah,
I was there.
11 years ago. Yeah. So
that's the last time we've beaten them entirely.
Yeah, like, it's, I mean, it's been a graveyard.
Taking out the issue of like NAB challenge matches. I know we've beaten them in a couple of them, but yeah, we haven't beaten a Chris Scott coach side. So we haven't. But every time that Geelong, we've always been competitive against Geelong in the last few years. They've always just then run over the top of us in the last quarter. Last year, even when we were at our worst last year, we had a 6-goal lead at 3-quarter time at the G on a rainy, was it Sunday afternoon last year? No, actually, it might have been Saturday last year. It was the Sunday the before, and they ran over the top of us in the end.
And can I also say that wasn't a dig at Scott Turner either. Scott Turner was one of the great Richmond players.
Gary Ablett was just next level.
It's just unfortunate that Scott Turner had Gary Ablett, Tony Lockett, Jason Dunstall, all those blokes.
Paul Salmon,
to come up against week in and week out. I remember one year he kept Jason Dunstall goalless, I think, against Hawthorn.
Might have to go down memory lane and get Scotty on the line and do a bit of that. Talk about that. That'd actually be an interesting thing we should do.
Very, very, very maligned.
That's what we'll do in the off season. We'll catch up with a former Richmond star. Keep the podcast going.
I'm quietly confident going into this, which is funny because after the way I went into the game against Hawthorn, you know, where I had my doubts and, you know, reasons for sitting there going, oh look, we're going to throw us. I actually go into this one with there's nothing to lose from this one for us because we've banked that win and I suppose going in as some sort of an underdog down there.
No, I think there is a lot to lose for us in this one because in 3 weeks' time we could be playing Geelong.
Yeah,
in a first qualifying final or whatever they call it in the first week. So I think bragging rights are pretty strong here in this week going into that first final.
You're right. No, yeah. You're right. I'm going along to the game on Saturday afternoon. I don't know about you, gentlemen, but I'm going to go.
You're one of 37 Richmond supporters that are allowed.
So I wanted to bring that up actually because I know there's been a bit of Twitter bolstering and people on social media not happy about why isn't this game at the MCG. Well, I can tell you that, you know, I'm as big a Richmond fan as anyone, and yes, I would have loved this game to have been at the MCG as it had been in the last 3 or 4 years, but based on scheduling, it's Geelong's home game. We were expected to be bottom four, and the last.
But regardless of that, it's Geelong's home game.
Yeah,
end of story.
They can play where they want. And based on statistics of how the crowds have averaged between Geelong and Richmond for the last 10 years, they've usually only drawn about 35,000, even when they're at the G. So, you've got to try and anticipate these things 12 months in advance.
We play our home games at a ground that holds 100,000 people. That's fortunate for us. They play their home games at a ground that holds 40,000.
Yep,
that's just the way it is. End of story.
So I know there's plenty of Richmond supporters out there who might be listening to this, going, "Why aren't you going into bat for us down at Cardinia Park?" Just look at it this way. Imagine how sweet it'll be if we do go down there. Like, it goes back to the traditional stuff of, you know, going back into enemy territory and actually winning on away soil. I love it.
Damien Hardwick's comment of the fact that we love travelling interstate and we're a pretty good team, and that's why I have no issues that I think we'll do the job against Fremantle the week after over in Perth, because we've done pretty well over there at Domain Stadium against Freo in the last few years. Bring it on. Absolutely bring it on.
We'll go down there, and you know, I love that sort of tribalism of it's like the 80s when you'd go to Vic Park and you'd beat the, you know, you go into enemy territory and there's 1,000 Richmond fans and 15,000 Collingwood fans, and how sweet are those wins when you win
exactly
on, when you're allowed, so please, I know that, you know, the Richmond supporters who can't go and attend the game, you know, that I feel for you, but at the same time, it's no different to, you know, why don't we ask GWS to move their home games from Spotless Stadium?
Here's a perfect opportunity for the Richmond Football Club to say we're putting a massive screen on at Punt Road. It's going to be a massive family day for Richmond supporters. Come on down and support the Tigers as a group at Punt Road. Let's get 10, let's get 15,000 people there. Let's get the Channel 7 cameras down there to cross to us every time Richmond
kick a
goal.
Make it like a final. It'll feel like a final.
Exactly. Let's show the club just how many people are behind these boys going into the finals. This Richmond, you've got 5 days to organise it, and I know it can be done. Get a few barbecues out there. get a big screen on the on Punt Road Oval and get 10 to 15,000 Richmond supporters supporting the Tigers and just showing the rest of the world exactly what a force we can be come September.
Just before we wrap up, because I know that we will, and we'll get your tips in just a tick.
And I know you're listening to Richmond Football Club. I know you listen everywhere.
Dusty Watch, you know, 2 weeks ago we were all getting a bit nervous because we were hearing all the rumour mills and all that sort of stuff. If you believe the latest rumour mills...
signing today.
He could be signing as soon as today.
Yeah,
so,
we record this on Monday, so... Yeah.
So I know Tony Sheehan, you know, who does get a lot of trade whispers through
on which phone?
On
the left or the right?
The left
hand?
Of Tony Two Phones. he went as early on as Friday night as saying that, you know, poised to sign a deal worth somewhere between 1.2 and 1.3 a year.
And we've got him on the line now. No, we don't. No.
That's you know, that seems to have ramped up a little bit over the weekend. I know Brendan Gale was pretty coy to comment on anything yesterday, but you know, if we believe that, I know that you know, we might even do a Dusty little special if it happens.
I would be disappointed if he did sign today.
Why is that?
Well, because it means he wouldn't be a man of his word. He has always said he's going to leave it to the end of the season. So, Dusty, be a man of your word and leave it to the end of the season.
Well, I think the best indication was that, you know, Ralph Carr said last week that, you know, he'd be waiting till the end. When he said end of the season, he thought, oh, home and away season. Now, a lot of people went...
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah, a lot of people went, oh, that must mean that he's, you know, why would he make an announcement if he was leaving, if it was the end of the season and playing for us? He never said making an announcement. He just said he might come to a decision by then. Now, I get the impression that if that decision is leaning towards, you know, if you believe the rumour mill, if they're pretty close and that he's going to stay, then, yeah, they'll just get it out of the way. And it'll actually be a really, really nice... you know, good boon for the team leading into the final series, if that's done.
So once again, we go back to what we said 5 or 6 weeks ago with Dustin Martin. Why would he want to leave if Richmond is the best team that he can play for at this point in time?
Exactly.
You show me another team that would be interested in Dustin at the moment that is better than Richmond at the moment. I think there is none.
It was just about, it's all about Ralph Carr, his management, just wanting to make sure he gets the best deal possible.
Have no issues with that at all.
And my qualm with this is what I was saying last week, is that I just felt like, you know, where we were sitting with the money, we just needed to come up that little bit more because, you know, we spoke about the matching of, you know, we spoke about potentially, you know, we've got the mechanism to match an offer. My worry was that if we waited till the point of having to match an offer, that someone like North Melbourne might get desperate enough to put 1.8 on the table. I don't want it to get to that point. So my mentality was, if we just come up that little bit more and get it done now, it will never get to that point where a 1.8 is even on the table. So if that seems to be what's going around, that maybe they've come up to sort of 1.2, maybe 1.3, and maybe added an extra year, just give him that bit of extra security. And you know what? You're like, yeah, if you're getting that sort of money, and exactly. Richmond would be selling the vision of, you know, it's not just about the next 6 years for you, Dusty. You know, you've got a clothing line. We're going to put you here, and we're going to make
it's all
you do
about
this.
The branding.
Exactly. And you've got to look at Matthew Richardson. He's got a job for life at Richmond if he wants it. That could be you too. And you know, it's all about setting you up for the next 20 years of your life, Dusty, with our contacts and all that sort of thing. So, if that all goes ahead, what a boon for the Richmond Football Club and what a time it's going to be. If it doesn't, well, then we play out another couple of weeks of speculation and see what comes of it. A tip for Saturday, gentlemen.
Geelong by 10 goals.
As per tradition. Carl?
Geelong also by 10 goals. No, I think we'll win.
You think we'll win?
And thank you for keeping up my tradition last week. You're welcome. I very much appreciate it.
Anything else to add before we sign off?
Yeah, Dusty's a Tiger for life.
That's what I like to hear.
I'm a Tiger for life.
I'm tipping. I'm,
so am I, but yeah.
We're all Tigers for life. And it'd just be so hard to see him in another colours, but I'm pretty confident now that he'll be staying. I'm tipping Geelong to go down to us by a goal. I reckon we'll get the chocolates this week.
Did we just come up with a new membership slogan for next year?
Tigers for life.
Yeah, exactly. Especially if we are holding up that Premiership Cup.
What about these stripes ain't painted on?
I don't mind that. We should do... Actually, we'll put that out on Twitter, at Tiger Tragics. Tell us a membership slogan for next year.
I've got one, but I'm not going to tell anyone because I want to sell it to Richard.
They should have done it at the end of last year when Britt Delidio left us. They should have said the lid's off.
I was just thinking the same thing.
Very nice.
The lid's off. Well done to Britt Delidio as well, by the way. He's, you know,
he got through a game,
but he's well done. He's, you know, we have a soft spot obviously for you, for Lids. Yep. Thank you, gentlemen.
Yep,
we'll catch you next week.
Thank
Go
you.
Tigers.
Go Tigers.
You're getting ready to go out. You want to get in the mood. There's a playlist for that. You move to the beat. You trip over the dog. You're not dancing anymore. You open the Medibank app and find a physio. We live in an on-demand world, and now your health insurance comes on demand too. Download the new Medibank app today.